from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the new movie Zero Dark Thirty about the hunt and capture of Osama bin Laden opened in some Bay Area theaters over the weekend. While the film has been widely praised by critics, it has come under fire for its depiction of torture and the role of enhanced interrogation in bin Laden's capture. Two leading journalists, Glenn Greenwald and Mark Bowden, join us to debate the portrayal of torture in the film, as well as the ongoing additional controversy over the film's portrayal of the CIA. We'll also discuss the nomination by President Obama of John Brennan to head the CIA. That's all coming up on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Zero Dark Thirty, the new movie written by Mark Boal and directed by Catherine Bigelow, who worked with Boal and won an Academy Award for The Hurt Locker, is all about the hunt and the capture of Osama bin Laden. It opened at a number of Bay Area theaters over the weekend, and the film has been widely praised by critics, but has also come under fire for its depiction of torture and the role of enhanced interrogation in the capture of bin Laden. In this opening Forum Hour, we take up the debate with Mark Bowden, national correspondent for The Atlantic and author of The Post, Zero Dark Thirty is Not Pro-Torture, also author of books including The Finish, The Killing of Osama bin Laden and Black Hawk Down, and Glenn Greenwald, who is a columnist for The Guardian, that's the UK Guardian, author of a recent column, Zero Dark Thirty, CIA Hagiography, Pernicious Propaganda. He's a former constitutional litigator and author of books, including With Liberty and Justice for Some. Let me say good morning first to Mark Bowden. Welcome to the program. Mark Bowden?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I didn't hear you there for a moment. Glad to have you aboard. Thank you for joining us. Also want to say good morning to Glenn Greenwald, who's also with us this morning. Good to have you.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Let me begin, if I may, in fact, with you, Glenn Greenwald. We're going to get into this whole debate over Zero Dark Thirty and torture, or as was called, enhanced interrogation. But I'm interested first in getting your take and Mark Bowden's take, because I think they're different, just like there are very different takes on the movie. About the nomination of John Brennan to be the new head of the Central Intelligence Agency. And I should mention that I read the article that you wrote where you said a number of things about Brennan that were really quite serious and damning. Do you think he should not be the nominee?
I think he should not be. In 2008, recall, there was an indication that he was President Obama's top choice to lead the CIA. There was a major controversy that erupted because of numerous statements that he had made over the years praising the Bush interrogation program, including techniques that most decent people regard as torture, as well as the rendition program, something completely antithetical to President Obama's platform when he ran for president. And as a result, he was forced to withdraw his name from consideration. Remarkable that 4 years later, President Obama returns and names that same person to that same post with very little controversy. I think that shows how much we've changed as a country in terms of how we think about these issues.
Well, you also point out in the article you did on this that he essentially lied and said that bin Laden used his wife as a shield, and there was a firefight with the SEALs that took place at Abbottabad, and as a counterterrorism advisor, also lied about civilians not being hurt in drone attacks. So all this stacks up in your mind pretty much to a candidacy that should not be supported.
Yeah, he has a history of making proven falsehoods. The falsehoods that he spread about the killing of Osama bin Laden, the immediate aftermath of the announcement that bin Laden was dead, had a major role in how the world perceived that killing. If they had known that we had just entered that compound and shot somebody who wasn't resisting, who was unarmed, lots of people would have perceived it much differently than they did because Brennan falsely claimed that bin Laden was in a firefight. Same with the drone program. Brennan falsely claimed that there were no civilian deaths in Pakistan for the year period beginning in 2010 to the time he made that statement in 2011, a claim that has been definitively disproven by numerous independent journalistic sources that there are dozens and dozens of children, women, and innocent men that have been killed. So you would not only have his support for the torture program, but also a series of very serious and clearly false claims that he made to the public.
And Mark Bowden, in your mind, this does not stack up to a candidacy that should not be approved. And in fact, you think there's many reasons and bona fides why it should be approved.
Yeah, you know, I think John has been a very dedicated public servant and intelligence officer for a long career. He's been instrumental in whatever successes we've had as a nation in dismantling al-Qaeda, capstone by finding and killing bin Laden. You know, I think he has served the country honorably. And with a long career, I think it's certainly true you can find things that he's said or answers that he's given to questions at press conferences that you don't agree with, or which later proved to be not entirely correct. But I think that's it's a stretch to say that he was lying or deliberately trying to mislead people.
Is it a
if anything, he has a problem in the opposite direction.
Is it a stretch to say, though, that he was in favor of so-called enhanced interrogation and renditions and so forth?
No, I don't think that's a stretch. I think that's a fact. And I think he was very much in the mainstream of the intelligence and military community back in the early 2000s, right after the 9/11 attacks. I think we have evolved as a country in our thinking about these issues, and we've certainly calmed down a great deal about the level of threat, which I think alters the way that people think and comment on this. But no, I think that's a fair characterization. He was in the thick of that, and if that's going to be held against him, that would be the one thing I think that might pose a problem to his being approved.
Well, let me go from there to the movie, because essentially, and we'll hear from Glenn Greenwald on this, he says it glorifies torture. You take a completely antithetical point of view.
I do, yeah. I think, my reading of the film is that it portrays some of the more brutal and clumsy methods that we undertook early in the first months and years after the attacks of 9/11 as having been largely futile. And I think that leaving out some of the harsher aspects of the way that detainees were treated would have opened up the filmmakers, I think, justly, to an accusation that they were whitewashing the story. But my reading of the film and the scenes that depict torture are that they very clearly show those methods in the case of. Were ineffective.
And Glenn Greenwald, you see things completely opposite.
Right. I mean, I think it's really important to note, and this is true for both the Brennan discussion we just had and the Zero Dark 30 discussion that we're having now, that Mr. Bowden himself has been a longtime advocate of the Bush administration's interrogation program, including torture. And I say that not because I think it's credibility crippling, although I do, but because I think it clearly reflects the fact that if you're going to question whether or not John Brennan's support for torture should be disqualifying, or whether or not you look at Zero Dark 30 as being historically accurate in terms of showing that torture is valuable, the fact that one...
Glenn, excuse me, we're having some problem with your line. Let me see if we can get a better connection, and let me go back. I'll come back to you in a moment as soon as we get a better connection, but let me go back to Mark Bowden on that. You want to respond to essentially, you said it wasn't necessarily to undercut your credibility, but saying that you did support rendition and interrogation that was enhanced, supposedly?
Well, I think that's actually not a fair characterization. I did write an extended essay for The Atlantic, I think probably one of the first that tried to seriously think about the issue of interrogation and coercive interrogation, and that's available for anyone to find, online. But basically that essay concluded, and I still believe the same thing, that coercive methods of any kind ought to be banned, and that any interrogator who utilizes them ought to expose themselves to discipline or prosecution. And having said that, I also said, and I still believe, that there are instances where breaking the rules is very important. And I think those instances arise only when lives are at stake, when you have an opportunity to forestall tragedy. In the case, in several instances of subsequent years, I wrote that I did not believe that interrogators who used coercive methods against detainees ought to be prosecuted. And I still believe that they shouldn't be. But I nevertheless don't argue that there should be any legality or any effort by those in power to authorize the use of such methods, and I think I've been very clear on that.
It sounds like a pragmatic view in many ways. Would that be a fair characterization?
Well, I think if I part ways with the anti-torture crowd completely, is that I can clearly envision instances where I think it is morally incumbent to pressure someone to give information. And when I wrote that essay in 2003 for The Atlantic, I gave specific examples of cases, real cases, where I thought that was the case. I do think it's a slightly more subtle position than saying, you know, you should never torture anyone under any circumstances, or that torture is perfectly okay in my book. And by acknowledging that there are instances where I think torture is appropriate, of course, opened myself up, as, you know, your other guest, Glenn, has just said, to being, you know, the advocate of torture in the Bush administration. I should point out that the piece I wrote was published before revelations of Abu Ghraib and other widespread abuses, which all were things that were actually, you know, clearly abuses, clearly illegalities and mistakes, in retrospect.
Well, let me go back to Glenn Greenwald. I hope we have a better connection now. Glenn, I want to get you on record about why the movie, in your judgment, does glorify torture.
Well, it begins with very harrowing audio tapes of people trapped inside buildings on 9/11 that obviously make the viewer very emotionally distraught, rightfully so, and it immediately leads to 45 minutes or so of the film overwhelmingly dominated by scenes of the CIA torturing helpless victims. So right away, it's manipulative in the sense that it begins its history with 9/11, making you very angry about what happened, and then immediately showing CIA agents torturing people, making clear that that's the emotional and intellectual justification. But the real problem is that the film shows that the key piece of information that led to the finding and killing of Osama bin Laden was extracted from a detainee who, for the first 45 minutes of the film, was brutally tortured. He then gave up the key bit of information, which was the identity of Osama bin Laden's courier that led the CIA to be able to find bin Laden, when he was sitting at a table eating with two CIA agents who had spent the first 45 minutes of the film torturing him, and they then threatened him to return him to torture. The line right before he gives up the key information is, you can tell me what I want to know, or I can hang you back up to the ceiling. And he then immediately coughs up the name of the courier that led them to bin Laden. So the key message that huge numbers of people, writers, journalists, politicians, who have seen this film received and was intended to be conveyed, is that torture played a critical role in enabling the finding of bin Laden. That would be bothersome even if it were true. The fact that it's a complete fabrication is what makes this film so reckless and disturbing.
Well, also, what about the connection to the Central Intelligence Agency? I mean, in many respects, your article seems to point out that there was, if not complicity, the CIA essentially creating a jingoistic potential script that simply enhances, well, their narrative.
I mean, this is the critical point, I think, Michael, is that, you know, the film has received a lot of controversial attention because of the issue of how it falsely shows torture is valuable. To me, the even more disturbing part is that the film was made by having the filmmakers meet continuously with the CIA at a time that the Obama administration was saying to courts and to media outlets and activist groups, we cannot release any more information about the Bin Laden raid because it's classified. The CIA was then passing non-public information, possibly classified information, to the filmmakers, and the entire film is told from the CIA's perspective. The CIA agents are heroes. Everyone in the film, with almost no exception, who's Arab or Muslim, are shown as being evil, menacing, threatening terrorists. There's no ambiguity or moral debate about torture, about what the United States' role in the world is doing. Everything is told from the CIA's perspective. Mr.
Bowden's colleague at The Atlantic, Peter Ma, said the most disturbing part of the film is it's essentially government-embedded movie-making. It's the CIA using the power of Hollywood to propagandize the citizenry to see the world as the CIA wants them to see it.
Yeah, but I think you get a different perspective, obviously, from Mark Bowden, who says this is Hollywood. It's Hollywoodized. And, in fact, a lot of the movies about the CIA in the post-Nixon era have been of evil and diabolical figures. The fact of the matter is that the CIA also trips over a lot of things and doesn't get the job done as far as getting to Abbottabad or getting to the trail of bin Laden for quite some time, keeps, in fact, putting things off and making mistakes. Mark Bowden, I don't want to speak for essentially your position, but that's how I read your article.
Yeah, I think, in fact, you know, the film does accurately reflect a lot of the early failures in this process, and I think makes a very clear point that up until fairly, you know, late in the game, their efforts to find bin Laden were bearing no fruit whatsoever. In fact, there's a very strong scene right in the middle of the film where they get a visit to the embassy in Islamabad from a high-ranking CIA officer who upbraids the whole room full of people for failing, for not being able to get the job done. So I think that, you know, I've described some of the criticism of this film as a willful misreading of it, and I think that would describe the version that Glenn has just given.
But what about Glenn's argument here that there is a kind of cartoon-like portrayal not only of Muslims, although there is one CIA officer who's high up who is seen almost gratuitously on a prayer rug as a Muslim before he authorizes some payment for a car in Kuwait to somebody who's going to be an informer. But the idea, in other words, that a lot of the story came down from the CIA because there were clearly, and Senator Feinstein and others have asked for this to be investigated, there were clearly things that were drawn in the movie that showed the CIA's point of view that they were really responsible for what happened in Abbottabad.
Well, I think that's true. And I think what they set out to do in telling this story was to tell the story of how the CIA found Osama bin Laden. And, you know, if there are heroes and bad guys in a film, I think it's true of almost any Hollywood film, the heroes in this case are imperfect CIA agents who nevertheless succeed in the end, and bad guys are Islamist terrorists who are depicted primarily in that role. So I think, you know, Glenn's right. I mean, there's not a lot of room in that piece of storytelling for presenting you know, a broader picture of the Muslim world, but that's the story that they told, and I think they got it pretty right.
And what about, Glenn Greenwald, the fact that the story does include torture, that, you know, to make a script and to Hollywoodize it and put it in a certain time frame and so forth, you have to compress things, you have to create characters sometimes that are one-dimensional and all that, but also you have to pretty much include torture in this because torture is a part of the story.
Sure. Nobody, certainly not me, and nobody that I've read of the film is bothered by the fact that torture was shown in the film. Torture did happen. It should have been shown in the film. What the problem is that the way in which it was shown is a false history. This is what Jane Mayer in The New Yorker said, who's probably the foremost journalistic expert on the Bush torture program. She said, what is so unsettling about Dark 30 is not that it tells this difficult history, but rather that it distorts it. And then she goes on for a long article to document in detail all the ways in which the claims this movie advances about the torture program are historically and demonstrably false. This has been the criticism from people like filmmaker Alex Gibney, who won an Oscar for his documentary about the torture program, national security reporters around the country, the senators that you mentioned who have access to the top secret information about the program. Nobody can test that torture should have been included in this film. It was part of the history. There were people like Mr. Bowden and others who advocated and supported that program. It's a part of history. It should be shown. The problem is that it is completely fictitious in convincing huge numbers of people that torture was a key ingredient in enabling an event that huge numbers of Americans consider to be one of the greatest events in American history, which is the killing of Osama bin Laden. That will convince people to accept Mr. Bowden's view that torture is sometimes productive and necessary and morally justifiable.
Well, you also mentioned the senators, and we should mention there's bipartisanship here. Carl Levin and Dianne Feinstein, as well as on the other Republican side, John McCain, questioning this. But what about the 6,000-page report that came out on the CIA's detention interrogation program? It confirms, doesn't it, that the Bush-Cheney administration post-9/11 embrace of torture did not yield critical intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, the letter that was written by Senators McCain, Feinstein, and Levin, and you know, these are probably the three senators in the Senate who know the most about the torture program because of their positions on the committees and McCain's obvious interest for personal reasons in torture. It's incredibly clear, and I encourage everybody to go read it. It's a letter, it's an extraordinary letter to Sony, the distributor of the film, making clear that, as they put it, quote, Zero Dark 30 is factually inaccurate. And we believe that you have an obligation to state that the role of torture in the hunt for Osama bin Laden is not based on the facts, but rather part of the film's fictional narrative. And I think the problem here, and the senators actually cite this, is that the director of the film, Catherine Bigelow, the screenwriter, Mark Boal, have been running around the country praising themselves for making not only a film, but an act of journalism. That's what she has been patting herself on the back for having done, is approaching this journalistically. Mark Boal said, as a reporter, I wanted to approach this topic as a journalist. The very first screen of the film, after the audio tapes of the 9/11, say that this is based on first-hand account of actual events. So the claim, the film makes all kinds of claims to journalistic accuracy and historical accuracy, and yet, as these senators detail very compellingly, as did Jane Mayer and others, the film is actually a pile of falsehoods.
And how do you respond to all that, Mark Bowden?
Well, I think that, and as I wrote in The Atlantic, the film does fictionalize the early stages, in fact, the whole process of the hunt for bin Laden. And like many Hollywood movies based on a true story, it departs, you know, in a lot of particular instances from the record. But I do think that the allegations that torture played no role in finding Osama bin Laden are wrong. I think the record shows, and I wrote a book on the subject, that the earliest mentions of Ahmed from Kuwait, the courier who eventually led us to bin Laden, came from some of the most notorious instances of coercive interrogation that we know about. I think that I pointed out in more detail than I can in conversation with you, the letter that Greg refers to from Dianne Feinstein and the other senators plays a sort of a subtle lawyerly game with the facts, but I don't think that there is much dispute over the facts at this point. And I think that there is a narrative that people who are principled opponents of torture would prefer, which is that torture had no role in any of this, but I don't think it's accurate.
Well, I'm going to open up our phone lines and also invite you, our listeners, to join us in this conversation. A lot of really important issues here that we're taking up, not only the role of filmmaking and based on a true story, as this film is, how much it can be touted as journalism, and one thinks, of course, of Oliver Stone and the way history is transformed into celluloid and all of that, but questions also about the CIA nomination and what Glenn Greenwald calls the hagiography of the CIA. Let me hear from you. In fact, you can join us now at our toll-free number, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, and are welcome to join the conversation at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free, 866-733-6786. And, of course, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But please feel free to join the program. Talking with Glenn Greenwald and Mark Bowden about Zero Dark 30. If you haven't seen the movie, it doesn't really matter here. There are some central questions, as I say, that we're investigating, and we would like to hear your input. So feel free to join the program. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We began this hour talking about the nomination of John Brennan as the new head of the Central Intelligence Agency to replace General Petraeus. But the real substance of this program is about Zero Dark Thirty, the film by Kathryn Bigelow as director, which revives the torture debate. It's a movie about the hunt and capture of Osama bin Laden, and it opened this past weekend in a number of Bay Area theaters and throughout the country. And the film has certainly been praised by critics for its filmmaking, many calling it the best movie of the year, but it's also come under fire for a depiction of torture and the role of what is called enhanced interrogation, particularly during the Bush administration, in the capture of bin Laden. I should also mention that we're going to go to your calls in just a moment here. Mark Bowden is with us, national correspondent for The Atlantic. His most recent book is The Finish, The Killing of Osama bin Laden. And he put a post up, Zero Dark Thirty is Not Pro-Torture, which can be found at theatlantic.com. Glenn Greenwald, columnist for The Guardian, that is the UK Guardian, author of the recent column Zero Dark Thirty, CIA Hagiography, Pernicious Propaganda, former constitutional litigator. Books include With Liberty and Justice for Some. And by the way, you can find links to both of the columns that we're talking about here on our website, kqed.org/forum. And I also ought to mention that this movie has been not only praised, but a lot of the criticism has been around the issue that we're taking up here. I happened to see it over the weekend, and I should just put out a caveat here. The torture scenes are pretty grim. There was a woman sitting next to me who had her head in her lap during all of those torture scenes, and they're tough to watch. Let me go to your calls. We begin, Benjamin, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I had a comment about, I guess, one of the guests mentioned at the beginning of the film, there are sounds of 9/11, and then goes through 45 minutes of torture scenes that, as he, I think, said, serve essentially as a connection to show that this was the intellectual and moral justification for torture, that 9/11 was the moral justification for torture. And I would like to remind, I guess, listeners that that was the Bush administration's moral and intellectual justification for torture. And while I disagree with it and find it reprehensible, I think that I haven't seen the film yet, but if it's as he describes, then I would go so far to say at least that portion of the film as he describes accurately reflects the mood of the Bush administration and the actions that it took. Again, I don't like it. I disagree with it. But that doesn't seem to be. I think that if I'm wanting to recall what happened 10 years ago, 11 years ago at this point, that I think it is important for us to make that connection. As wrong as it may be, and I don't necessarily think that putting it in a movie like this would I guess endorse it or suggest that that torture is accurate or effective. Again, not talking about the rest of the film, but just that first 45 minutes.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. It was Glenn Greenwald who said that. And Glenn, I want to get your response to the caller saying there is an accuracy there in cause and effect, but also that early waterboarding and putting that man in the box and all really got nothing from him. That's a point that Mark Bowden says in his article, because they were trying to get information about the hit on Saudi Arabia, and he was giving different days for the hit, and Saudi Arabia got hit anyway.
Well, again, the key piece of information of the film, which the entire second half of the film is devoted to tracking down, comes from the detainee who is brutally tortured for the entire first 45 minutes, and it came immediately after he was threatened to be hung back up on the ceiling and tortured again. There are other scenes in the film showing detainees begging and pleading not to be tortured any longer, offering to answer any questions. There's a scene that shows the CIA agent objecting at the White House to the fact that President Obama has banned torture on the grounds that that prevents them from getting any useful information from detainees. No other side of that story is told. As Jane Mayer said, there's no indication that there was any debate within the CIA or the FBI or the U.S. government about the efficacy and morality of torture. It's all purely told from the CIA perspective. And even going to that first scene that the caller just mentioned, of course, the attack of 9/11 has to be shown and mentioned in a story about the hunt for Osama bin Laden. But this is really my main problem with the movie, is there's a whole history about the U.S. role in the Muslim world and why the terrorists struck on 9/11, and the fact that for decades the United States has been engaging in violence and all kinds of manipulation and oppression in these countries that cause people to want to come and do violence to the United States. The fact that the United States is a party in a country that does all kinds of heinous violence in the world, a critical part of the events leading up to 9/11 and Al-Qaeda, is nowhere to be found in this film. The only people that you ever see engaging in horrible violence are Muslims and Arabs against Americans. Americans are always the victims, but never the United States to the rest of the world. Beginning with, if you start the history with these extremely emotionally manipulative calls of victims of the 9/11 attack, and then show scene after scene where Arabs and Muslims are engaging in violence that kill innocent civilians who are Americans, kill CIA agents, that cause all kinds of emotionally distraught people to react, what you're really doing is telling a very one-sided version of the story that just happens to be the version of the story that the people who fed them the information, which is the CIA, wanted to be told. And I think that's what makes this the film so disturbing.
Well, I have a listener here, Antoine, who writes, I think the debate is misleading. I do not think that most Americans care that any individuals were tortured in order to get information leading to the capture of bin Laden. Also do not think that most Americans care that they walked in and put a bullet in his head. As far as the movie goes, it's a movie. You can find something completely inaccurate or misleading and or politically incorrect about a lot of films. We just want to be entertained. That's the bottom line. And you would say what to that, Glenn Greenwald?
Well, first of all, President Obama campaigned in 2008 on reversing the torture program and condemning it, and he won. And it was a central part of his campaign. So apparently some people cared about the fact that the United States was torturing. As far as, though, it's just a movie is concerned, lots of entertainment products have an incredibly significant impact on the way in which people perceive of their government. And the fact that, again, the film is making claims about being journalism, the first reel of the film claims that it's based on firsthand accounts of actual events, means that if it's radically untrue and is altering people's perception of torture, I think it's something that ought to be objected to. And that's presumably why three senators took the extraordinary step to write a letter objecting to the film.
Mark Bowden, what about those journalistic claims? What about the fact that the filmmakers actually not only talked to the CIA, they talked to the SEALs?
Well, hats off to them. You know, I think when I go to try to write a story, the people I want to talk to most are the people who were directly involved. So, I mean, I've had background briefings at CIA myself. I've interviewed CIA officers. I have talked to Navy SEALs. You know, it's not easy to get that kind of access. And so, you know, I think that that all definitely improved the telling of the story, and in particular just informed, you know, a great, you know, amount of specific detail. Having said that, you know, and as I wrote in The Atlantic, I think it was a mistake for the filmmakers to tout what is basically a feature film as a work of journalism. It clearly is not. I mean, they've invented characters. They're taking shortcuts in storytelling, which I think are necessary and are part of what it means to make a feature film based on a true story. So there's nothing wrong with what they did, but I do think in the promotion of the film, maybe in an effort to enhance its stature, they've, you know, which is what publicists do, they've oversold it as a work of journalism.
And Mark Bowden, I want to go to our callers here. Glenn Greenwald, you want to respond? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say, you know, I think there's been a lot of controversy about the process of embedding reporters with the military in wars because of the way in which it co-opts their mindset and controls what they're able to see. And Peter Moss, who's a longtime journalist who covered wars, who was embedded with the U.S. military, wrote in The Atlantic, which is where Mr. Bowden works, that, the quote, the fundamental problem with this film is that our government has again gotten away with offering privileged access to carefully selected individuals and getting a flattering story in return. That's what he says. The reason that this embed exists is because the government does its best to keep journalists away from disgruntled officials who have unflattering stories to tell. I think that was the process that led to the creation of this film, and the product is very much one that is very pleasing to the CIA.
Well, I'm also looking at an email here that Mark Bowden, I'd like you to react to, and you may want to respond to what Glenn Greenwald just put on the record here. But Sean writes, why does it matter what Mark Bowden believes or doesn't believe about the appropriateness of torture? Who are journalists to decide, and why do we elevate their opinions to policy-like stature? We are, after all, a nation of laws, and both the Constitution and the Geneva Convention prohibit torture, period, full stop, end of story.
Well, I agree with him. Why should you care what I have to say about it, other than, you know, I think as a citizen and as a journalist, what I try to do is think through some of the public policy implications of what's going on in the world. And, you know, as part of that process in particular, when I write an extended essay, I feel it's incumbent on me, having gone through the reporting and the careful effort to sort of parse through a subject like this. I think it would be fairly unsatisfying if I didn't arrive at any conclusion. So I think there are certain kinds of reporting where it's important for the reporter to stay out of the storytelling. But certainly when you're writing an essay about something like interrogation, I think part of what that entails, I think, is trying to arrive at some conclusion.
Well, here's a listener who slaps your amicable host's hand, saying you should stop saying enhanced interrogation and say torture, and rendition is kidnapping. You're an English professor. Think Orwell. Well, we'll just let that stand, although...
Well, actually, it's an interesting point. I don't agree with your caller, because I do believe that by slapping the word torture on any form of pressuring a detainee, it does distort the argument. Torture is a terrible thing, and some of the things that were done were pretty awful. If you go back to the Inquisition, I mean, we're all horrified by some of the dreadful practices of, you know, trying to wring confessions out of people. But I think there are, you know, when you use the same word to describe keeping someone awake for 48 hours to mean the same thing as impaling someone slowly on a stake, you've definitely stretched the meaning of the word to beyond reason.
Well, there's also just semantic difficulties. Sometimes one doesn't know whether to say illegal alien or undocumented worker, because these kinds of ways of characterizing resonate so differently for people in terms of what they connote. But let me bring some more callers on. And Jim, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you. Okay.
Great topic. I'm coming from a different bent on the whole thing. Former combat Marine Vietnam, I deal with a group session of 12 of us, and most of them are Iraqi and Afghanistan vets returning after too many tours over there. But the big thing about this film, and we can go back all the way, the impact on the young people, Iwo Jima, Sands of Iwo Jima with John Wayne, going up to Green Beret, to some new, other films come closer. What they depict, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, the kids swallow it, and they believe that it's all that easy and it's going to go that way. And I see the returning consequences, and it's far, far from the truth.
All right. I thank you, and we'll let that statement stand, and we'll bring another caller on. That's you, Jordan. Thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi. Thank you for having me. My perspective is more of a pragmatic one, and that is, you have this situation to where these people need to get information, and I realize that torture is not necessarily a nice thing, interrogation, let's call it that, because there is a distinction between interrogation and torture, and you have these agents who need to get information, and if they're not producing results, they sometimes resort to more drastic methods. And while that may be a bad thing, put yourself in their position. They need to get this information. They have soldiers dying in the field, and they're doing their job. They're trying to do their job to end the conflict. They're doing their job to try and defeat the enemy that has attacked us, and whether it was justified for them to attack us because we have invaded their country, their holy land, what one of the previous callers said, I understand. But, if you were trying to get information from somebody, how would you do it? You're not producing results by simply asking them questions. So what do you do? And I think that's more of a pragmatic stance.
Well, we talked about pragmatism before, Glenn Greenwald, when we had, unfortunately, a bad connection with you. And about that argument, I mean, because you do get into the whole general argument about whether or not torture can ever be... and we've certainly had it with Mark Danner and many others here on the air many times. But the idea of taking a pragmatic stance instead of just black and white, it's moral versus it's immoral. If you can get information through some form of torture, so the argument would go, especially if there are those who are out to hurt the homeland, that's a tool in the toolbox.
Right. I think the caller is sort of expressing the moral rot that makes this film so dangerous in terms of how it exploits it. I mean, you can look at the pragmatic question, and there's an FBI interrogator, Ali Soufan, who has been very critical of this film. He said, he was part of the interrogation program done by the FBI that did not involve what everyone in the world who has ever worked on these issues before agree is torture, which are the techniques used by the Bush administration. The FBI used traditional interrogation methods that was much more successful than the CIA program. And he said, quote, the information that was used to get bin Laden did not come as a result of waterboarding or torturing. Of all the people that are talking about this, I was the only one in the room. Enhanced interrogation techniques did not work. But even if torture does work, and, you know, Mr. Bowden has an interest, other people have an interest in claiming it did because they were advocating this program, it has been a staple of Western morality for almost a century that torture in all circumstances is morally repugnant and unjustifiable. In fact, Ronald Reagan in 1986 signed the Worldwide Convention Against Torture that not only banned torture under all circumstances, said there was zero justification for it, national security or any other, but required that every signatory to that treaty, including the United States, criminally prosecute any official, political official, who authorizes or engages in torture. And unlike the ideas that we had before that, well, torture is just sort of a semantic term and maybe we shouldn't really call it that because it's misleading, it actually has a very precise legal meaning in international law and domestic law. The United States government has prosecuted as war criminals soldiers of other countries who have used waterboarding, who have used stress positions, who have used sleep deprivation and other forms of coercion and manipulation on the grounds that there is no justification for torturing a helpless victim, a helpless detainee. It is wrong in all cases. So if that caller or other people want to come out and say, you know, as Mr. Bowden said in 2003, torture should be banned but also quietly practiced. That's what Mr. Bowden wrote in 2003. What you're essentially doing is opening up the entire world to torture anytime governments decide that they can get a benefit from it. And I do think that is both morally repugnant and unjustifiable. You can't have a rule that says only the Americans get to do it but nobody else can.
Response, Mark Bowden?
I actually agree. I think that you ought to ban these practices. They should be banned across the board. I've been fairly consistent about saying that. I don't agree that punishment or discipline ought to take place automatically, and I don't agree that there is never an instance where it isn't morally justified. In fact, there are. But I think these kinds of cases have to be weighed on the basis of individual circumstances. And there are certainly, I can definitely imagine situations where I personally would be willing to break the rules. I don't believe you can change the rules. I think the rules ought to be what they are because I think it's the only way to prevent the use of abusive methods from becoming widespread and for them being used, you know, across the board, which has happened. In fact, I think it happened during the Bush administration years. But having said that, I do believe that there are individual instances, and I think they're rare, where leaning on somebody to get information is the right thing to do.
But there is, as Glenn Greenwald said, a slippery slope. You can do it for your side, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be done from the other side's point of view.
Well, you know, and I agree with him. I think that, you know, it is a slippery slope, and that's why it ought to be banned. And I think the mistake the Bush administration made, and other countries have made, Israel has made this mistake, of trying to authorize certain limited forms of coercive interrogation. I think whenever that's been tried, it leads inevitably to widespread, unjustifiable abuses. So, you know, whether it's the courts of a given country or whether it's some sort of international tribunal, I think that the people who step across that line ought to be liable to prosecution, but that the decision to prosecute or discipline should be made on a case-by-case basis.
And again, Mark Bowden is national correspondent for The Atlantic. Glenn Greenwald is columnist for The Guardian. And Kathleen is our next caller. Kathleen, join us.
Hi, good morning. I heard somebody earlier say that that the public was not concerned about torture, and then the gentleman commented afterwards that he thought that they were. I must say that I was so appreciative that President Obama had made that a central issue in his campaign, and that I was so appreciative on the second term that he had implemented that, no torture. That was the reason that I voted for him. If he had done nothing else other than that, to me, he earned a second term because I had been suffering for my conscience with what the Bush-Cheney administration had done. Yeah. I'm retired military, and I just really thought that it was absolutely wrong.
Well, Glenn Greenwald, I think it's safe to say that you see the Obama administration stepping in line here by the nomination of Mr. Brennan.
Well, the Obama, one of the very few civil liberties promises that President Obama actually kept, more or less, was the idea that these tactics that were approved under the Bush and Cheney administration would not be approved under his. There's evidence that we have farmed out torture to third countries, to third-party countries, that we send people to be rendered still to other places where they're treated very harshly or even tortured. But certainly there's been no authorization of these tactics under the Obama administration, although I do think that, for example, making somebody like John Brennan, who was an explicit supporter of torture, who played some role in the creation of these programs, be the CIA chief, is essentially saying that even though I think torture might have been wrong on pragmatic grounds or other grounds, the message that it's sending is it's not really a crime. It's not something that somebody should be deemed a criminal for or have a loss of career status or platform. It's just an everyday reasonable political dispute that people of good faith can have. And I think that's the message that has been sent by President Obama.
Well, President Obama also, President Obama also promised to shut down Gitmo, but last time I looked, it's still open.
Yeah, not only is it still open, and it is still open, the plan all along was to keep indefinite detention, even if he had been able to close it. And most of the Bush-Cheney theories that were once so controversial just a few short years ago among Democrats and progressives have continued in full. Some have even been extended, like assassinating even American citizens without due process.
Kathleen, you wanted back in here.
Yes, I'm very concerned that Gitmo has not been closed down, and I think that it hasn't been that he's not been trying. I think there have been just too many forces against it. I don't think it's right to retain people. What would we do if we had another person in another country who was being retained indefinitely without being charged? It's absolutely criminal in my mind. I'm so appreciative also of the veteran who called in who's working with the Iraqi-Afghani veterans, because I think that indeed it does portray, the movie does portray things in a way that people swallow hook, line, and sinker because they think that it's okay and it's going to work that way, but it doesn't. These people are very, very distressed and disturbed when they come home, no matter what, who has gone to war, what time they've gone to war, whether it's World War I, II, or anything subsequent to that. It's very, very damaging. But the ends do not justify the means, as far as I'm concerned. And going back and going against the Geneva Conventions is not the way to go.
Kathleen, I appreciate your call. Thank you for that. And I want to get another caller on here. Matt, join us. Hi.
Hi, yeah, interesting debate. And I'd like to disagree with the premise that was expressed before that this movie conveys the United States and the war on terror in some type of good light. I mean, I say this as somebody who's from Lower Manhattan, and know many people who were killed or affected by 9/11. I saw the movie twice. I'm not proud to be an American after seeing the movie. I don't know how anybody can sit through the torture scenes and feel that way. And I think that, you know, really getting to the topic of the film, what Catherine Bigelow is doing is conveying that, you know, both the United States and al-Qaeda in this war on terror, for 10 years, were very systematic in the brutal things that they did to other people. And that's really the takeaway that I got from the film. Thanks.
All right. I thank you. You know, I'm looking at a listener's email who says she'd be curious to hear the guest's opinions about Naomi Wolf's piece calling Bigelow a Leni Riefenstahl and accusing her of producing government propaganda. Glenn Greenwald references that Mark Bowden in his article. And by the way, you can read both articles by Glenn Greenwald and Mark Bowden by going to our website. You can find the columns there at kqed.org/forum. And he says the difference between Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, which was a Nazi propaganda film, is that it was essentially factual, based, you know, on history. This is presented somehow as fact, and therefore, in some ways, I think I'm interpreting Glenn Greenwald, you as saying it's even more invidious. And I like Mark Bowden's response to this idea that this film almost serves some kind of government propaganda purpose.
Well, I certainly don't think it does. Right now, in fact, I think what you're seeing from the CIA, the Bush administration, and congressional Democrats and opponents of torture is an effort to portray the hunt for Osama bin Laden in particular as having been completely apart from the use of these very controversial methods. And, you know, I think that, in fact, Catherine Bigelow has gone the opposite way. One of the reasons she's been attacked by, you know, the CIA director, by the heads of the intelligence committees in Congress, is that she is challenging this comment that torture was in no way part of this story. In fact, it was an ugly piece in the early part of the story. And having said that, I think it's portrayed fairly. I think that the characterization that Glenn had, that somehow showing or listening to those voices of people trapped inside the World Trade Center towers on 9/11 distorts the story. In fact, that was the story. I mean, we as a nation were horrified and frightened and concerned that there were more attacks like this on the horizon. That was actually the climate in which these early arrests and detentions and interrogations took place. So, you know, I don't have any quarrel with the way that it's portrayed, and I don't believe that it's fair to characterize the film or the writer or the director as being somehow, you know, propagandists for who? For the Bush administration? For the Obama administration? For the CIA? I mean, they're all the ones who are complaining.
I think mainly for the CIA from your perspective, Glenn Greenwald.
Right, from the CIA, from people who approved of the interrogation program that was taking place in 2002, 2003, 2004. Anybody who approved of that CIA interrogation program that most countries around the world and human rights groups around the world have condemned as war crimes is going to love this film. That includes Mr. Bowden. It includes the people at the CIA who fed the filmmakers, all of the stuff of which this film has been made. Of course, the Obama administration isn't happy with the film. They have banned techniques that this film suggests were very valuable in finding Osama bin Laden. The film gives voice to a character complaining that Obama's banning of torture has prevented the CIA from keeping Americans safe, and never gives voice to anyone who disagrees with that view. So the Obama administration is unhappy with the film precisely because it serves as uncritical hagiography of the Bush-era CIA program in 2002, 2003, 2004 that Mr. Bowden and the CIA officials who fed them the stuff of this film support and like. And so they want this film to show that that program that they defended was critical and valuable in helping to find Osama bin Laden.
All right, we got seconds left. Mark Bowden, I want to get a final word from you, if I may.
Well, I mean, I listen to it. It's like a steady stream of mischaracterizations, for starting with the film, but including me. In fact, Mike Morrell, who's the acting director of the CIA, has been openly critical of this film. So, I mean, to say that it's somehow a propaganda tool for the CIA is to ignore that fact.
Well, we'll let it rest there. Thank you, Mark Bowden. Thank you, Glenn Greenwald. Appreciate both of you being with us this hour. Appreciate you, our listeners, being with us. Forum's producers are Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi and Amanda Stupai, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.